Good morning, UConn. Welcome to Husky Nation News. We've got this week's top news stories, from David Hogg's visit to the Huskies' big basketball win. You're listening to WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. This broadcast is in collaboration with the UConn newspaper, The Daily Campus, and UConn student-run TV station, UCTV. I'm your host, Daniela Donsell. Let's get to it. Gun control advocate David Hogg came to UConn last week to talk about young people being politically involved and gun violence. Reporter Kara Murray has a full story.
Student activist David Hogg spoke at the University of Connecticut on March 4th as part of UConn's Spring 2019 Metanoia, the theme of which is Youth for Change. Hogg is a survivor of the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School that killed 17 people in Parkland, Florida last Valentine's Day. Several hundred people attended the event, which was held in the UConn Student Union Theater. Since the shooting, Hogg has become a leader in protesting against gun violence in the National Rifle Association. He is part of the student-led gun control advocacy group Never Again MSD and helped organize the March for Our Lives demonstration that took place in multiple countries around the world on March 24, 2018. Throughout his speech, Hogg urged the audience to vote in the upcoming 2020 election, and emphasized the importance of young people letting their voices be heard, citing the bill on universal background checks that passed in the House of Representatives last month as an example.
We had the first bill around gun violence prevention passed the House of Representatives because each and every one of you stood up and made that a voting issue. Each and every one of you went out there and marched. Each and every one of you went out there and hosted and led your school walkout. Each and every one of you made this a voting issue and told Congress that if you stand by the NRA, you are not going to be in power anymore because the young people will vote you out.
He compared the abundance of media attention he and his classmates received after the shooting to gun-related deaths of teenagers in other cities. Hogg said the daily gun deaths of teenagers in areas like Chicago, Los Angeles, or D.C. receive little to no media coverage at all. Instead, he said, these deaths are covered as gang violence. Hogg said the reason for this unbalanced media coverage lies in the differences in race and economic status. Hogg also discouraged students from directing their activism towards or against one particular party or politician, saying the only way to stop gun violence everywhere is to stop the corporations and systems that fuel gun sales and promote passing gun laws.
Honestly, I don't care if you're a Democrat. I don't care if you're a Republican. I care if you actually keep your word. Let your enemy not be an individual congressman, not let your enemy be an individual person, but be the source of evil itself, because that is what we must be working towards addressing as Americans.
For junior elementary education major Marissa Nazaro, Hogg's story and message were particularly important to her.
Personally, like, I'm going into education, so his story definitely hits home, and it's something that I'm very motivated to, like, learn more about and be more actively involved in.
Hogg's presence also resonated with senior business management major Ellie Grafstein.
It's cool listening to someone like him speak because he clearly has no obligations other than this is something he's really passionate about and truly believes in. He's doing this solely because he thinks this is what's going to help the most people.
For WHUS News, I'm Kara Murray.
The results of the USG elections have come to a halt. The Daily Campus reports USG presidential candidate Priyanka Thakkar is guilty of many campaign violations based on the USG judiciary ruling. These violations include hanging posters without proper approval, failing to submit her campaign roster and budget on time, and tabling in unauthorized locations. Presidential candidate Fabio Saccomanno filed 5 grievances against Thakkar, which were reviewed at a hearing held Wednesday night. Thakkar's campaign lost 188 votes and gained 3 strikes, but she's still in the running. Chief Justice Nandan Tumu says the results for joint elections may be announced later today. A former UConn diversity official has been fined $20,000 after she awarded her husband a fellowship he wasn't eligible for or even applied for. Daily Campus senior staff writer Gabriella De Benedictis reports former graduate diversity officer Charmaine Thurmond made her husband Martinez Evans a fall 2016 fellowship recipient. The Hartford Courant reports Evans received over $53,000 without authorization from UConn to get the fellowship or other benefits. NBC Connecticut reports Evans did not apply for the fellowship, and he did not have the required degree to be eligible. Thurmond told the graduate school dean the decision had been approved by an independent selection committee. UConn's general university fee is proposed to go up for the first time in 5 years. UCTV reporter Isabel Wong reports the proposed increase of $23 per semester will pay for increased costs to pay university employees and new Husky ID cards with smart chip technology. UConn Chief Financial Officer Scott Jordan says the fee increase is determined by the fee committee, which has 5 students and 5 administrative positions. Wong reports that students say a 46-degree increase per year is not too much to complain about. However, this follows the announcement of the new Recreation Center fee of $250. Sociology major Nayula Sulumain says the university did not consider the range of socioeconomic statuses of its students. Students are calling for reform of UConn's counseling and mental health services. The Daily Campus reports students demonstrated Wednesday with posters and signs to raise awareness about CMHS needing improvements. Mental Illness National Alliance Vice President Anastasia Martineau says the demonstration was not to discourage students from going to CMHS when they need help, but to raise awareness that CMHS needs more adequate resources to improve and expand. Pathobiology major Lindsay Brown says CMHS is working with a broken system and deserves more funding and aid to support and serve UConn students. UConn students got a lesson about privilege and intersectionality with a caterpillar and a snail. Reporter Shira Tall has the story.
I'm really sorry. I want to go to a party also, but my shell is just too big and I can't fit. Maybe there's another way that we can get there together.
And the caterpillar was like, what? How dare you? Do you know how difficult my life has been? I have 12 feet and it's very difficult to find shoes. And the caterpillar is like, what are you talking about? Not saying that your life isn't difficult, I'm just saying that I am a snail and I have a shell and you don't. And that means sometimes some things are hard for me that aren't for you. Like, I don't know what it's like to buy 12 shoes.
And the caterpillar thought about it for a second and realized that the snail was right. And it's like that for all of us.
On March 4th, 2019, Francesca Ramsey opened Women's History Month with a discussion on privilege and intersectionality. She began her lecture with a story called Sometimes You're a Caterpillar, an extended metaphor for privilege. Ramsey continued her talk by acknowledging the internet and its role in her success. She started producing her own content about her natural hair journey after seeking information only to find that there is very little online for women of color. The video that really launched her career was her 2012 Stuff White Girls Say to Black Girls post, garnering over 12 million views.
Why isn't there a white entertainment television?
Is it bad to do blackface? Is that still a thing?
You can say the N-word, but I can't. How is that okay?
My best friend is black. I mean, she's still black.
Oh my god, I'm practically black. Twinsies!
She said that video quite literally changed her life, and she realized it was bigger than herself when appearing on Anderson Cooper.
Because here I was thinking that I was just making a video about my experience growing up in South Florida, where I was often the only black person in a lot of spaces, but it really started a global conversation about microaggressions.
This realization allowed her to focus her YouTube channel more on using comedy to highlight social issues rather than just hair and beauty. She then created and sold the show Decoded to MTV. She also discussed the negative side of the internet, filled with hate comments and petitions to get her fired.
Believe it or not, there are a lot of people on the internet that don't like me. Can you believe it? I can't either. They make these petitions to try and get me fired. They say things like, cancel Decoded because it's racist, fire Francesca, it's a racist show all about white shaming. I don't know what shaming is.
She also called attention to misrepresentations of Martin Luther King Jr., Hollywood's whitewashing of history, such as the recent film Green Book, and the Disney classic Pocahontas. Her argument was when this happens, we often forget about issues of intersectionality, understanding how different issues and identities of oppression overlap.
If your activism isn't intersectional, it's really not activism. You know, I think we talk a lot about solidarity. We want to stand up for women. When we stand up for women, we got to stand up for trans women. We have to stand up for disabled women. We have to stand up for undocumented women, indigenous women, lesbian women, black women, white women. Like, there are so many different types of women.
Ramsey further elaborated that doing the right thing is like playing an instrument or going to the gym. It requires work, dedication, and practice. She concluded her talk with 6 pieces of advice moving forward. Elevate the medium, elevate the conversation, be honest about your mistakes, call out but make space to call in, acknowledge your privilege, bake your own cookies instead of looking for others' validation, and pick your battles.
There are people in your life who want to learn, who want to be better. Those are the people that you should put your time into, not the ones who are just gonna play devil's advocate. Because, of course, somebody has to advocate for the devil. The devil's like, who will speak for me? Like, great, I don't wanna speak to you. It's okay to say no. And so, before I go, I'm gonna leave you with a quote.
Ramsey ended the night by quoting Martin Luther King Jr. and leaving the audience to ponder their own beliefs, actions, and identities. So the question is not whether we will be extremists, but what kind of extremists we will be. Will we be extremists for love or for hate? Will we be extremists for the preservation of injustice or for the extension of justice? For WHUS News, I'm Shira Tal.
In sports news, UConn's women's basketball won its sixth straight American Athletic Conference Tournament championship on Monday. UConn Today reports the Huskies beat the Knights of the University of Central Florida 66-45 at the Mohegan Sun Arena. Number 24 Nafisa Collier set an AAC record by scoring 85 points during UConn's three tournament games. UConn Today reports UConn is expected to be named top seed in the NCAA's regional in Albany. Now, for a quick weather report. Today, we've got some showers and some patchy fog between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m., otherwise cloudy with a high near 58. Tonight, we'll keep seeing those showers mainly before 1 a.m. and that patchy fog until 9 p.m. Otherwise, still cloudy with a low around 39. Tomorrow, we'll be seeing some sun with a high near 46, and tomorrow night, it'll be mostly clear with a low around 25. That's all the news we have for you. We'll be taking a quick break before moving on to the talk segment of our show. I'll be talking with WHUS's incoming operations manager for next year. Stay tuned.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Coffee may be an important part of your morning, but for 25 million farmers, it's their livelihood. And many of those farmers face problems as warming temperatures and changing rainfall patterns make it harder to grow high-quality beans. Meredith Taylor is with Counterculture Coffee, a North Carolina-based roaster. She helps run workshops with growers in Peru, Kenya, and elsewhere. She says there are strategies that might help farmers adapt to changing conditions, such as planting shade trees to cool the plants, or using new varieties that can withstand harsher conditions.
But not everything works everywhere.
For example, a farming cooperative in Peru decided to build structures to protect coffee beans from rain while they're drying. But a group in Guatemala...
they realized, you know, we actually have land that is so steep that we can't build these structures anywhere.
She says the workshops give farmers an opportunity to discuss a variety of solutions. Then they decide which changes are feasible within their growing conditions, business models, and communities. Taylor says this collaborative approach can help the whole industry prepare for the changing climate. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
And we're back. Before getting into the conversation, from this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this WHUS News Department show are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or licensee of WHUS Radio or the University of Connecticut. I am in the studio with digital and media design major Aiden Brickner. Aiden, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Daniela.
Thank you. It's so fun to have you here. So first of all, congratulations on getting the operations manager position. How does that feel?
It feels pretty good. I came into this station spring semester last year. Mm-hmm. I took a one-credit seminar course with our program coordinator, Jason, mm-hmm. Introducing me to the world of radio, media, and broadcast, which, as we'll discuss a bit later, I am already pretty well acquainted.
Right.
And from there, I applied for a job as inventory specialist, which I have enjoyed greatly. Mm-hmm. I think it was an awesome way to kind of introduce myself to the radio station's environment. Mm-hmm. And I met a ton of awesome people. And I wanted to give back more to this organization. So that led me to apply. I'm so happy that I'll be taking on the position next year.
What was your first thought when you heard the news that you were going to be operations manager?
So to be honest, I wasn't really thinking a whole lot at the time because, I was called to be informed of the decision when I was homesick with the flu.
Oh no.
So I kind of just rasped my way through a thank you. And then, I think I fell asleep for about 3 hours. So I was a little out of it, but I was very excited. I'm very happy to be working here.
Well, I'm glad you don't have the flu anymore.
It is very nice.
Yeah, yeah. So do you have any big plans for WHUS when you step into your position officially?
I'm not sure about any like big sweeping overhaul plans. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that the station as it has been through the past year has been really great. I want to kind of just continue that trend of greatness here.
Nice. Yeah. I do hear, though, that there are some ideas for decoration for your office. Allie Urban is the general manager who'll be joining you, mm-hmm. Taking over the radio station. I heard she has some plans.
She certainly does. We're both pretty big into the world of fantasy. Mm. So she is of the mindset that we should get a suit of armor for the GM and OM office, which I think may be a little out of our budget.
Right.
I did do some research on Amazon.
No way.
I did. They range in price considerably. I think the lowest price one that I saw was about $600.
Wow.
And the highest price one that I saw was about $2,400.
Wow.
So it's a bit much.
Yeah.
Hard to
argue.
Yeah.
To use that money to get a suit of armor.
Yeah, definitely. I was more to the trend of getting like a sword hanging up on a placard, but I don't think that's allowed in the student union.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I mean, if anything, you can get like a small miniature suit of armor.
That's true.
That could work, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah. So speaking of broadcasting, mm-hmm. I kind of want to move into something you've told me before that I've never really asked about. So I mm-hmm. really want to ask about it. You said that you're part of the TV station at your high school.
Yeah. So my high school, it was constructed relatively recently. So it had kind of like enough affordances for like, oh, we want to do these nice things. And one of those nice things that it had was a small TV station, a small little broadcast studio.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so it was associated with our local cable network. Mm. So open to the community, you know, you could come in and, you know, record stuff for the public channel. You know, I'm struggling to recall like exactly what we had, but I think we had like some kind of like nature-y type naturopathy thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that the high school was directly involved in it was primarily through video tech classes,
mm-hmm.
And then secondarily through the cable news club, which was called Newswatch. It was a club of students who were interested in video production, news, broadcast, sports, what have you, entertainment too.
Yeah.
And we would produce a cable TV show that would go out every 2 weeks on the local network.
Mm-hmm.
And it was entirely student run. We had a faculty advisor. He was great. Big shout out to Mr. Jansura. But yeah, I was involved with that my freshman year. We went through a period where an additional advisor was hired for reasons unbeknownst to me. Mm. And basically everybody quit because they didn't like him.
Oh, no.
Leaving us with, I think, about 4 active members, which is a bit of a bit of a skeleton crew.
Definitely.
for a television show.
Right.
But throughout that, I kind of stayed involved. I worked doing camera work. I anchored a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got our membership back up. I think it was my junior to senior year that we got a whole bunch of people. And it really kicked off. I was really happy with how it had kind of evolved. We had some really great entertainment programs. We had like this one kid. He was really awesome. He did like a weather report, but for just like places that were entirely not relevant to our local place. So he did one for Mars. He did one for Antarctica. He did one for like some remote Mongolian town.
What? That's amazing. That's very clever. I like that.
Yeah. So it was fun. I was director there my senior year.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, there's a picture of me up on the wall in there.
What?
yeah, of directors past. And yeah, it was just like an awesome experience. I loved working there. I did kind of move up to doing like live broadcasts, like actually for the town. Mm. So like I would be at the town hall late at night, you know, filming whatever committee meeting there was, which wasn't the most exciting, but it was necessary and it was a good experience.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed my time there. It was awesome.
That sounds so cool. Yeah. My high school had nothing cool like that. We had a newspaper that like, for my first 3 years there, like, hardly existed. They did, like, two editions, and that was pretty much it. My senior year did pick up, though, because a lot of people in my class started actually getting involved. At the time, I was not a journalism person, but, like, funny enough, being the news director now, but, yeah, I wasn't into it. And so the only thing I remember, really, of the newspaper was that they always had a countdown to how many days was left till the end of the year. So that was the only, that was all I was waiting for, to be completely honest. Yeah. But that's really cool.
It is really cool. Our school had a newspaper as well that, us at Newswatch would frequently disparage, and so they were taking away our extensive TV audience.
Right. So yeah. Well, listen, we can talk all day about broadcast versus print, but you know, we won't put that can of worms right now.
Yeah.
So speaking of like technology, you worked with cameras and stuff. Is that part of the reason why you went into DMD your major?
I would hazard the guess that is 100% of the reason, because. To get into the DMD program, you have to submit a portfolio. And I was not a huge artist in high school. I was mainly taking engineering and science courses because I thought I was going to be an engineer. So what I did for my portfolio is I just took a Word document. I linked every single show that I had done for the year in it. And the shows ranged from anywhere from like 20 to 45 minutes.
Wow.
And there were maybe 15... shows 10 to 15. And I just sent that in with part of my portfolio and like some photography and like one piece of digital art I had done. And that's how I got in. But I applied to the program just because I thought it was like a really cool concept. I was like, oh, this is really cool. It's working with the realm of the digital, which is obviously very up and coming and expanding greatly. And it just seemed like a program that was very up to par. It wasn't just like something that was kind of off to one side and underfunded. And I was just like totally blown away. What also helped is that I got a regional discount because it's part of like a New England program.
Gotcha.
Where I don't have to pay as much as the out-of-state tuition because it's nice. Like the only thing like it in New England.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So do you have plans for after you graduate? I mean, I know you've got some time, but like,
do
you have an idea of how you want to, like, I'm assuming you want to go into broadcast continuing with that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that'd be really nice. I mean, I would also enjoy kind of going into some kind of media production. So my current concentration in DMD is digital humanities, which is just kind of like the blending of the digital world and the humanities world, like English and history, and how the digital can be adapted to fit those things and the scholarly attributes. I'm minoring in human rights, so just because like I feel like I want to feel like I have an impact. So what I'm hoping I can do is combine that in some way to kind of like raise awareness or document humanitarian issues in my professional career.
That's very admirable. I like that.
Thank you.
Do you have any personal projects you're working on right now?
In terms of like humanitarian stuff?
Doesn't have to be, but like I know, at least for me anyway, even though I have a lot of stuff going on, excuse me, hit the mic. I still do like off the side projects that are just kind of for fun for me to get like more experience on something. Like last year, I made a mini documentary about my roommate. Really, I was just testing the cameras and equipment that I had gotten from the journalism department, but I wanted to test it out by like actually filming something and like actually editing it and like trying to learn how to use all these things. So I went up to my roommate one day and I was just like, can I document your life for like a day or two? and she was just like, she was very against it because she's very shy. And I was just like, it's fine. Like no one's going to see it. It's just for, like, it's okay. And I ended up documenting it. Not the great, it shouldn't be called a documentary because I had to like tell her to like, hey, can you come in through the door again? Because I didn't catch that. but it was fun. It turned out to be great. And she doesn't like it, but I thought it came out cool. I got a really cool shot of my fish. I had a goldfish at that point. So, but yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah. So, moving away from that for a quick second, okay. backstory. You, in order to get your position, mm-hmm. a part of the thing you had to do was actually host a show on the air.
I did.
And you got a show.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I'll let you tell us what exactly is your show.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. So, I had to, if you are familiar with alternative / indie music, I'm sure that you are familiar with the kind of trend of using nautical themes generally as a metaphor, be it the ocean, talking about, you know, just like swimming, drowning, being on a boat, you know,
right.
that kind of whole thing. It's a fairly large trend.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured that's how I'm going to distinguish myself from all the other indie stuff because it's a college radio station.
Right.
So I decided to only play nautical themed stuff, and I thought that I should come up with a character that would reflect that. So I created the captain Everett Chatham, who is the persona that I embody while I am on the air. He is the captain of the CS Florencia, which is a cargo ship. And there is also, I haven't quite gotten there yet because it's only been my first couple of shows.
Right.
But there is going to be an in-universe story in the audio breaks, which I am looking forward to doing.
No way.
Yeah.
So is it going to be like his backstory or more just like his journey? Because I know I heard one of your shows and you kind of give us a look into like where Captain Chatham is at the moment on the seas and everything. Mm-hmm. Also your theme song at the beginning. Great. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Love it. But yeah, so do you have any like backstory already for?
Not really. I mean, I kind of threw around the idea of him kind of dropping hints to like having an ex-wife, but that's just more because I thought it was funny. But yeah, no, I kind of like the idea of him not having a whole lot of character. I kind of like the idea of him just kind of being the vessel, pun intended, through which the story is conveyed, which, to elaborate, is going to be probably more of like a Night Vale style kind of creepy paranormal type thing, just because
cool.
I love that kind of thing when it comes to, I mean, everything, but especially the ocean.
Gotcha.
I think it's great.
Cool. That's mm-hmm. really cool. Yeah. Yeah, no, I love the idea of, so I'm obsessed with just everything nautical. People will tell you without hesitation that I'm obsessed with mermaids and like the mm-hmm. sea and kind of stuff. So your show was very much up my alley. How hard was it to find music that had that theme for you?
Not that hard, honestly. There are two artists that I'm very familiar with that I was able to get like 8 songs from, like 8 to 10 songs easily, and I could get more. And then I also asked around the station for people who had recommendations, and I just kind of, I would go to prominent artists and I would just like, I'd go through their discography and look for something that like hinted at the ocean, and then I'd look at the lyrics and, oh, it mentions lifeboats, it's good. But yeah, currently I have a set playlist that's about 6.5 hours of content.
Oh, wow.
So.
Pretty good.
Yeah, so I'm fairly happy with it.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much, Aiden, for sitting in with me. We're getting near the end of the show, but this was a lovely conversation.
It sure was.
Before we end the show, I have been asked by my mom to give a shout out to my family in Colombia. So if you'd pardon me for a quick second. Muchos saludos a mi familia en Colombia, mis abuelos y abuelas, y tíos y tías, y primos y primas, todo el mundo que está escuchando. Muchísimas gracias por escuchar. Would you like to shout out anyone, Aiden?
Shout out to those fine folks that you just shouted out.
Great, thank you. Well, so a big thanks to all of you listeners for, you know, tuning in onto this show. Thank you to the Daily Campus and UCTV for collaborating with us. And, of course, thank you to Ethan Smith, who's the creator of our theme music. I've been your host, Daniela Doncel. Be kind to yourself and have a lovely weekend.